So welcome to Careers in Your Ears, the careers podcast for PhD students and research staff produced at King's College London. I'm Donald Lush, one of the team of specialist careers consultants here at King's, working with our researchers. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Dmitry Kishkinev of Kiel University, who is both researching and teaching in the field of animal behaviour. Hi, Dmitry. Welcome to Careers in Your Ears.
Hi.
Can I start by asking you a little bit about what you're doing right now in your job? And how you got to this stage in your career?
Thanks for having me here first. So I am now a lecturer at Kiel University, or University of Kiel, if you prefer. I've been here since November 19, 2019, so joined just before the pandemic. And right. It's my first lectureship position of this sort. I am officially lecture in animal behavior, though I also come across neuroscience. I would say I am two-thirds in animal behavior and one-third in sensory neuroscience. So
great.
What I do, I actually do research and I do teaching. And in terms of teaching, I teach from like across quite a few levels, what we call level three or the first years, up to the level six for the final year. I also have and teach some postgraduate students, PhD students. I'm expecting postdoctoral fellow to join my lab soon this year. It's quite a lot different on different yes. levels in terms of teaching. In terms of research, yeah. So I think the hint is in the name. I do quite a lot in the field of animal behavior. I also interested in different sensory systems, particularly in the sense of magnetic field changes, or magnetoreception, which is quite interesting. I'm happy to tell you more about my research. I think it's coming a little bit later.
Yes, we're going to hear a little bit about that more later. A little bit about your history. So how did you get from your PhD to where you are now?
So very briefly, story of my life, let's say. I'm born and raised in Russia, and I did my master in St. Petersburg University, which is the second largest university in Russia. So I did it, I would say, in zoology. I think even during my late undergraduate years and then into my postgraduate master in biology, I was quite actively engaged in research of some academic teams. In Russia, we have what we call Academy of Science, which is maybe similar to CNRS in France or Max Planck Institutes in Germany. So those institutes doing primarily research. And it was a pleasure to work on a few different projects. It was all in the field of ecology and what we call movement ecology, how animals move and why they move. And I did my master's there. And then I was looking into the PhD as a next logical step. And I had a couple of offers, both in Russia and abroad. And eventually I did my PhD in Germany, in the University of Oldenburg, which is North Germany. And my lab was working in the field of animal navigation and also sensory neuroscience, hence my interests in these fields. After my PhD, I earned it in 2011, so a while ago. I had quite a few postdoctoral positions across different universities and countries. So I had a postdoctoral fellowship in Canada, a couple of years in Ontario. I then moved to the UK, where I'm now since about 10 years. And I've been working in Northern Ireland, Queen's University Belfast. My research team moved to Wales, where I'm still living. I did my another postdoctoral fellowship at Bangor University. And this is where I finally joined Kiel as a as a lecturer. So
that's
quite a travel.
Yes, you've traveled around a lot. I don't think I've interviewed somebody who's worked in so many different places. That's really interesting. So at some point, you must have taken a positive decision that academic life, teaching and research was the thing you wanted to do. Excuse me. Did you consider doing anything else, or was this the thing you'd always wanted?
I think I was leaning towards this this career since my late undergraduate years, I think. So of course, I didn't have any clue about where and how I can progress and make a new step. It was always a surprise, a coincidence, depending on who would like to do any collaboration with me or what jobs are on the market. So it was a stepwise process. However, I think over the years I became a bit more skeptical about academic career, at the same time appreciating the things that I think matter to me most. Yes, I did consider changing the career, especially what I call the death valley of the postdoctoral positions, where you are jumping from one fixed term position to another, and being in your late 20s and the 30s, having a family and dreaming about settling down, you kind of forced to sometimes be worried, what is the next step, where is the next job? And this is not this kind of job where you can find where you can easily find something in the commutable distance. Sometimes you need to move countries or continents even. So that makes your life quite complicated. So I think this is usually the pivotal moment when many people are considering other careers. And I'm quite interested in academic industry links. So I'm probably, because of this uncertainty, I was looking around where I could work elsewhere. And I was considering different positions in the data analysis, in data analytics, let's say, consultancy. I think that those are two major pathways that my peers undertaking. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've ended up in academic
I ended up here, for now, but... Yeah.
Great. So thinking about your academic career, you've mentioned some of the challenges. You mentioned, I love the phrase, the Death Valley. I really like that. How did you overcome some of those challenges? What did you kind of say to yourself, or what did you do to address them?
It's a good question. I think I may sound like I have an answer to this. I don't. It's quite challenging, and it depends on very many personal factors. Also your caring responsibility, your mental health, and your preferences, I would say. So what drives me most in university is intellectual freedom, I would say. There are challenges, of course, securing funding, for example, or finding ideas, but I don't like a lot of ramifications and things coming from the market. For example, this is a product we want to develop. Though I do think science needs to be applied and useful as well. Sometimes it needs to be answering basic questions. But I like this freedom, intellectual freedom. I think that's what drives me most. And this is, I think, this is how I overcame these challenges, I would say. In terms of how I did it, I think it was combination of luck, but not only, it's also some perseverance mm-hmm. and a lot of thinking and trying. So it's basically the challenge of how you want to develop your particular project while bearing in mind that the funding is fixed termed, and you need to think about the next step sometimes almost at the same time as you start your project. So sometimes that the project is 1 or 2 years, so you need to think ahead and be strategic. And very important challenge is basically try and think that it's not always you, it's also a very competitive environment, and very often, even if you close and you fail, you need to try more. It's like, I don't know, tossing a coin in the air, knowing that it should be then something on your side. You just need to have a few trials.
Yeah.
And be realistic about yourself. If you hate writing grants, if you don't generate ideas, and if you just want very specific project which is given to you from above, maybe it's not for you. Maybe it's and it's fine. It's absolutely okay. There are people who make ideas, and there are people who are just they make them work. I think it's just different types of jobs.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a job like any other one. So coming back to kind of one of the challenges which I think always crosses my mind when I'm speaking to someone who teaches and researches, you must have to juggle your time and make decisions about priorities quite a bit. So can you tell me a bit about that? How do you find time to make sure both of them work?
Yeah, that's probably, when I say be strategic, it's exactly about that. Mm-hmm. So very, very common example, and that's why a lot of postdocs actually, when they or PhDs, when they leave academia, they become project managers, because basically it's the same. Your academic project is not much different from any commercial project, let's say, or a book, which might be a project or whatever project you have. Yeah, so you prioritize, you need a team, you need to be a team player, you need resources, and you need to think how much time you spent on the current project to deliver this one, and how much you need to put ahead, so that you would know what to do after this one is coming to an end. So to be a more practical, very often postdocs or PhD students, they stressed in the last year to finish what they started, and get your PhD done, get your postdoc, your grant done. Yeah, that's fine, and you need to set yourself the minimum. However, you need to leave yourself some time to think what's the next step, and some time to discuss that with others. Mm-hmm. Very often people don't come with a solution, but they give you some ideas, and they can point to other people, to projects, to funding schemes. So start thinking about that, and start thinking how much time, even at the start of the current project, you can put towards what's happening in a few years down the line. And be realistic, because you need to juggle, like you said, you need to juggle a lot of things. There's also life, there's family, your hobbies, and all of that. So you need to juggle all of that. And you can try maybe more or less depending on the circumstances, but you need to try something, and you need to plan this. So maybe more practical example, how many proposals and where you want to put in a year from now, so that you're not going crazy and you're not leaving your family, and you still care about others and yourself as well. So think about this number and then do that, but actually deliver that rather than just push it down the line.
So it's all about planning, really. I think it's a feature of academic life that people find it difficult to say no sometimes. So you're saying sometimes put some limits on what you're doing.
And also, I think it's the picture of the very, very many people are disappointed because of the expectations. They expect, if they get a great idea, that this will be supported eventually. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot of randomness. And if you brutally honest about the whole system, it's not like system is bad. It just, it has this randomness. So you need to understand, even if your ideas are very, very great, you need to try a few times, just because you need a bit of leeway for the, some failures, just because of random factors. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of have these expectations, you will be upset, you will be disappointed, and sometimes you need more time than you expected. Usually that's the case. but you will have mental power to overcome that because you know you planned that it will be some failures.
plan for some rejection. That's very wise. That's great, thank you. Moving on even sort of deeper into research, we were introduced to each other by the Liverhulme Trust, and you were recommended to me as someone who had experience in gaining research funding. So can you tell us a bit about that? What do you think are the necessary thoughts for being successful in getting research funding?
It's a very good question. I still don't know the answer. It's the process where you try to juggle a lot of things. You account for randomness, for time necessary, and you need to have good ideas communicated very clearly and also fit to the purpose or fit to the process, let's say. That is how they say 99% of how they call it? So 99% of groundwork and 1% of great idea, let's say. So things like, when is the deadline? Is it fixed or not? How much time you need to develop this idea and get all other things done? What is the success rate? It might be a great funding, but if the success rate is very small, better put two or three other proposals where success rate is higher, and it might be less of the grant size, but it might be much more realistic for yourself. So I think it's this combination of factors. Plus, I think over the years you kind of understand the backstage. Sometimes you do back engineering. Basically, you just talk to people who got funding before, who were sitting on the panels. You just think common sense. How much time do I have to read proposals or anything at all now with the social media and emails bombarding us? Not much. So think about others who will be reading what you just wrote. If it's very dry, lengthy language, they're probably getting tired and they're not getting to the point. So yeah, so basically, and I think reading a lot of other, you know, other people's proposals or ideas and trying to pick on the weaknesses and trying to improve it for yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. Reading feedback, honestly, because very often people ignore feedback. Sometimes it's meaningless. Sometimes it's quite random. However, it still gives you an idea who might be reading your proposals and what you need to maybe say clearer and preempt this critique.
That's great. I mean, those are very kind of rational ways to approach it. And I think the thing I often say to people is, think about your audience, think about who's having to read what you're saying, rather than you just saying what you think should be said. So you're now in a position where others are looking to you really to lead, you know, and to suggest ideas and to make things happen. What's helped you most in preparation for that? What if anything did, you know, or were you just sort of flung in at the deep end?
I think it's coming with some age and experience. Yeah, even if you don't want, you kind of you have to. And sometimes I'm scared. Sometimes I'm feeling like imposter syndrome. But sometimes you're thinking, well, I probably can. I just need to focus and think what other people expect from me and how to make things happen, keeping everyone happy. So in terms of, I actually made some notes. I was thinking about that a lot, and I think very often one of the things I like is be reflective. So think what you didn't like in terms of the previous work and what you didn't like during your PhD or postdocs and what you would like to change for others who are now looking up to you. So I think it's generating ideas. However, they should be grounded. They need to be realistic and, you know, fundable. They need to be interesting for others, not just for yourself.
Yes.
So they will be then leading people without you, you know, being too excited. They will be excited as well. I think it's, yeah, be a bit less authoritarian, lead but not dictate. So be open. Very often I change project of my previous supervisors and they were happy at the end. So be ready that others will come and say, well, Dmitry, what about we do it our way? Be open and honest because it's expectation management. If you, you know, hand wave and draw beautiful pictures, people will be upset and they will be just misled, I guess. Observe others, notice what drives them because it's very personal. Some people just like science and other people are very strategic and they want something on CV. So think what they actually want and then try to strike the balance between what you need from them, but at the same time, how to make their dreams come true. Well, you know, meet some, you know, dreams, make their dreams come true as well, I guess. I think this is very, it's very difficult, but I think that's the way to lead.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, that's an amazing list. And I think you've just shown how difficult it is to actually lead, actually, and how many things you have to keep thinking about. I think that's a really interesting insight.
And the teamwork, it's also quite difficult because sometimes even if you think people need to work in teams, they just don't. So you need to make them work together and, you know, just leaning on their strengths and weaknesses and maybe avoiding their weaknesses wherever they can collaborate. They should, but some things don't work in the team, so you need to then give these people different tasks, I guess.
Yeah, so again, like you were saying, always observing what's going on. Yeah, really, really interesting. That's great, thank you. We're wrapping up now, so I just really like to thank you, Dmitry, for sharing your thoughts and insights. I feel like I've had a real insight into your world. I'd also like to thank the Levy Hume Trust for introducing us and being so helpful and generous with their time in the production of this episode. Join us next time on Careers in Your Ears when we'll be continuing our exploration of researcher careers.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.